Everybody sitting in the room, you yourself and everybody around you, is what we might call a seeker, looking for something. You have a curiosity about something, you are looking for something. This is common to everyone in the world, an activity in the mind which wants something, which suspects there is something to find, and which is looking for it. Now, for everyone in the world, the things that are being sought are common things: security, happiness, peace, safety, contentment, meaning, all these things people are looking. In some people, that looking takes a spiritual direction. We find ourselves looking into the spiritual, what we call the spiritual, the essence of things, the subtle, that which is not apparent, that which is not seen, but we suspect. We have a calling towards it, a draw. Some of those people take on spiritual practice, do yoga, follow religion, come to talks like this, read, pursue, become a spiritual practitioner of any type. And then those seekers are called sadhakas, sadhak. Everyone here, whatever your spiritual life is like, I imagine there is a component of spirituality in your life, following that and doing something about it is called being the sadhak, the spiritual practitioner. But then what do you do? Gosh, what a marketplace there is of spirituality. What a confusion. Why? Why is it like that? Why so diverse? Why so confused? In fact, why are we looking at all? It's a great question. Why don't we just know? Why aren't we just born with full knowledge? What is the lack? What is the gap? Well, we can answer that profound question. The gap is because of ignorance, a phenomena in humanity, in the whole of humanity, in every person in the world. There is a non-understanding of who I am and what this is. This is remarkable and something to note. It's a real phenomena in humanity, ignorance. Fortunately, there are repositories of profound, distinct, accurate, deep wisdom in the world, which act as a lake of wisdom in which the ignorant can swim and enjoy the swimming. Were that not the case, there would only be ignorance, and the seeking would be problematic. There'd be no guide, there'd be no vantage point, there'd be no milestone. There would just be unknown seeking in ignorance. I'm here today to speak of the Vedanta. The Vedanta is one of the great pillars of wisdom in humanity. Vedanta is one of the great pillars that supports the world in terms of understanding what this might all be and offering a solution to the ignorance. Knowing that is desirable. You can taste it. There's an excitement to it, a thrill, a flavor. When a person begins a spiritual journey, it is preparatory in many ways, preliminary. Usually, a person wants very simple things, some peace of mind, some happiness, some kindness, some generosity of spirit. to feel better about themselves. And usually that entails following my emotions or my moods or the things I might imagine, trying to satisfy what I imagine might be a better way to open the heart, to bring peace to the mind. Now, this is all inevitable and necessary, but it's preliminary. Mature spirituality is not following those whims and fancies. Mature spirituality is looking into the depth of things, into the heart of things, into the reality which you sense absolutely, but because of ignorance, do not see or know. This is good news. It's great that we live at a time and in a structure whereby wisdom is available. The Vedanta is many thousands of years old, prior to Buddhism. Very ancient, and yet unchanged across millennia. Not altered, not modified, not adapted, not improved upon. The articulation of it has been improved upon, because the original articulation is archaic. But the Vedanta of which I am now speaking, and we will continue to speak this morning, is as it was. Despite thousands of years of human intelligence, it hasn't been improved upon, or added to, or amended. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that fantastic? Consider that. Millions of genius minds have examined the Vedanta and found it to be good. This deserves, I suggest, some respect. It also offers a maturity, as I say, a still point amidst the marketplace of diversity, amidst the imaginations and the understandable fantasies of people. It offers a still point. And that, I suggest, is actually what you want. The Vedanta is written in written form. The source text is the Upanishads. There are many other texts, but the absolute source of Vedanta is the Upanishads. So this is the Vedanta. And we'll draw from this today a little bit, because it's beautiful, and also because it honors the tradition from which I speak, and which you now, at least this morning, are part of. So perhaps I can ask Anna to read from the Upanishads.
The Lord of love shines in the hearts of all. Seeing that in all creatures, the wise forget themselves in the service of all. The Lord of love is their joy. The Lord of love is their rest. Such as they are the lovers of the Lord. By truth, meditation and self-control, one can enter into this state of joy and see the self shining in a pure heart. Truth is victorious, never untruth. Truth is the way. Truth is the goal of life, reached by sages who are free from self-will. The effulgent self, who is beyond thought, shines in the greatest, shines in the smallest, shines in the farthest, shines in the nearest, shines in the secret chamber of the heart. Beyond the reach of the senses is he, but not beyond the reach of a mind stilled through the practice of deep meditation. Beyond the reach of words and works is he, but not beyond the reach of a pure heart, freed from the sway of the senses.
Now this is poetry, very beautiful poetry, pleasant on the surface to hear, but extremely profound, very deep. And there are three phrases in there that I would like to speak about. First of all, the term Lord of Love. It could be Lady of Love, Person of Love. The Lord of Love, the Lady of Love. What a gorgeous description of what we might use other words to describe of as the divine. What a beautiful description. The Lord, Lady of Love. And then it uses the word self, which is a very important word that I'll discuss in a moment. And then it uses the word truth with a big T, a capital T. Truth. Truth. What is the truth of something? Sometimes tricky to determine the truth of something in human relationships and in society. Sometimes difficult. But what is truth pointing at? What does truth mean? It means the reality of a thing. It means the honest reality of a thing. Now, science is trying to find out the truth of nature. In scientific endeavor, scientists of all types are looking at what exists and trying to discover it. Scientists are not creating nature. They're finding out what is. They're finding out the truth of nature, because nature is what it is. As we go on in our intelligence, we're discovering more and more and more of what that is and does. But whether we know it or whether we do not know it, nature is as it is. And that's truth. That's what we mean by truth. Similarly, in spiritual endeavor, in spiritual inquiry, what are we actually doing? Are we trying to create something? Are we trying to make something new? No. We're trying to see what is. And this, again, is a difference between preliminary spirituality, which is absolutely legitimate and fine and good, and mature spirituality, which this is. Where we recognize that what we actually want is the truth of what is. Now, in trying to make progress towards that, there are really three planes, three phenomena in your experience. One is you, the other is the world, and the other is what we choose to call God. That word needs explaining. I'm going to explain it in a moment. But these are the three arenas in which we need to investigate to find the truth, the reality, what is. So may I ask you some questions? May I say, do you believe you exist? Could you just indicate if you believe you exist? Never mind what exists, but do you believe you're present and you're existing? This is good news. It's true, you are. Do you believe the world exists, whatever it may be? Do you believe there's something to be experienced? Yes. Thank you for collaborating in my primary school questions. There's something, isn't there? You exist, the world exists. A more tricky question now. Do you believe God exists? Don't answer yet. Because it's an unfair question unless I say something about what I mean by the word God. Vedanta defines God. Even in non-Vedantists, the definition of God, which is regarded as being the finest that's ever been formed. I'm not going to go into the whole detail of it, because that's something else. But the definition of God in Vedanta is existence, consciousness, infinity. The name given for that is Brahman. It just means God. But the word Brahman means vast. That which swells and never ends. Another possibility for saying what God is God is that which creates, that out of which all this has arisen, that which pervades all of this, and that into which all of this is destined to return. Another possibility for saying what God is God is the essence, the power of love, the actual power itself. Not a part of it, but the actual radiance of love itself. These are grand statements. And then we can be much more intimate. God is that. God is that immediate inside presence, that friendship which hovers around my heart, that intimacy, that ally, that companion with whom I can have a private, inner, constant relationship. Another way of saying what God might be is, God is that. Purity. That powerful purity to which I can pray and have relationship. These are all possibilities. Now, somewhere within all that I've just said and the shades of grey that can be between all those things, just trying to absorb all those possibilities, may I ask you now, do you believe in the possibility of God? Could you indicate if you do? It's a trickier question, isn't it? So, if our objective is to find the truth of what is, and if we accept that the potential phenomena of investigation are me, this appearance of world, and the possibility of God, then where do I start? And Vedanta instructs very clearly where to start. It says, look into yourself. Look into yourself with skill and intelligence, using guidance and persistence and patience. Look into yourself and see what you can find in yourself. This is the route, this is the methodology of addressing that desire that the seeker has to find the truth of themselves. So, what might there be which is inside? What might be the subtle part of you? What might be that which is alive, that which is living? That which is driving this body and driving this mind, what might that be? What is it? What could it be? Let's hear what the Upanishad says in answer to that specific question which the seeker puts to the teacher in a very beautiful way.
Who fills my body with vitality? Who causes my tongue to speak? Who is that invisible one who sees through my eyes and hears through my ears? The self is the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the mind of the mind, the word of words and the life of life. Rising above the senses and the mind and renouncing separate existence, the wise realize the deathless self.
Poetry again. but again, profound. The eye of the eye. So not the eye itself, but that which is seeing through the eye. The ear of the ear. Not the ear itself. Not even the property of hearing, but that which is energizing that and making that happen. The mind of the mind. That which is experiencing the thoughts. This is pointing to something subtle, yet extremely present. What is the ghost in the machine, so to speak? What is the ghost in the machine? Well, often the answer to that question is given as consciousness. It's a great word. It's a good answer. It's an answer that I give, that other people would give. It's a sound answer. But not this morning, it's not. Because the word consciousness is not good enough. We don't understand what it is, what it means. It's abstract. It causes abstraction in our minds. So I want to this morning give it much more relevance. Consciousness is knowing. The power of knowing. Do you realize that this power is existing now? It's evident now. It can't not be there. Never mind the things you know, don't worry about what it is you are knowing, but knowing itself, the ability to know, is what consciousness is. Awareness itself. Is it that which is the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear and the mind of the mind? Yes, it is. To drill down more effectively into the word consciousness, I want to say to you that there are two absolute realities about you all the time, every moment of your life, which are always true. I am. Now, I asked you whether you existed and you said you did. It's good news. But how do you know that? There is something, you see. There's a something, an amness, an isness, a beingness. These words are often used to describe consciousness. I am is a thing. It's a real thing. It's not your senses. It's not your skin. It's not the sensations. Not what you see. Not the things. I amness is a sense of existence. This is absolutely real and present right now for everyone in the room. So this deserves some attention because it's not apparent. The things are apparent. How you feel, what you think, what you want, where you go, the plan for your day, actions, interactions, that's all apparent. But the sense of existence itself, there's a flavor to it, isn't there? A feeling, a taste. Perhaps it deserves some attention, some honoring, some recognition, some respect. That's the first thing. The second thing is that's real for you is I know. This is different. I know. I know things. Knowing is my experience. Existence is a power, you see, and knowing is a power. And it is that which is inside, which is the ghost in the machine, which is the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, and the mind of the mind. It is consciousness. But I'm explaining it in a different, more specific way this morning, so it's more direct, more real, and more immediate. And when the spiritual texts use the word the self, That's what they mean. For those people with a little less encounter with these teachings, words such as spirit or even soul come close. The eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the self. If when you leave here today, there's one thing that you ponder on, only if there's just one priority thing, I suggest to you that the fact I am and I know are the most direct experiences that touch your spirituality is worthy of consideration. Throughout your life, consider all the trillions of things that have happened and continue to happen. Incidents of mind and action and experience. Gosh, what a wonderful journey. What a terrifying and wondrous journey. But terrifying is also wonderful, but not wondrous. What a majestic experience life is. If we could pick a time in 1986, on a Tuesday in February, in the second week of February 1986, on a Tuesday, what was happening? You'd no idea. You don't know. But whatever was happening on that day was as intense, as real, as tactile, as important, as potent as right now. And whatever was happening on that day, you knew it and felt it. You had a sense of existence and you were knowing the experience and you were engaging in it, just like now. Yet the experience has disappeared. You may have been happy, you may have been sad. You may have been fulfilled, you may have been bereft. Anything could have happened on that Tuesday in the second week of February in 1986. But the thing has entirely disappeared. The only thing that's common then and now is the power of I am and the power of I know, which hasn't changed. If you don't see that, you could choose to believe it. It's true. The potency of knowing and being is not changing. That's fantastic. This is a really important thing to know. If I am the things that happen, if I am the incidents in February 1986, then I'm lost because they're all disappearing. They're temporary, they're vanishing. So if I was those things, if I was my face in 1986, if I was the image in the mirror, if that's what I was, then it's disappeared. So I'm lost. I'm constantly losing myself. But if I am, if I actually am knowing and being, if that's what I am, then I am never lost. Even though the stream of events flows through me. And this is exactly what we discover as we look into the Vedanta, and that's exactly what that passage was referring to. So, the statement, I am consciousness, is a valid thing to say, if it's understood. But the more direct understanding is what I have just described. I am, and I know, all the time, without any effort on my part. Do you see that? No effort. It's spontaneous. There's effort in things. Life is tough. Lots of effort in dealing with the truth of society and relationships and my mind and my heart. But the primary properties fueling my life of knowing and being head and heart are spontaneous because they are nature itself. Just as science discovers the truth of nature, so spirituality discovers the truth of the self, which is knowing being. Effortless, beautiful, peaceful, happy, free. The mind is not like that. We'll come on to that. But that which is the mind of the mind and the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear is stainless and unaffected by the incident on the second week in February 1986. This power was shining then. This power is shining now and continues to shine. That is not the background of my life, that's the foreground of my life once it is seen. Wow. How can it be that time? Does anyone understand time in the room? Okay. Could you read the third piece, please?
As there can be no water without the sea, no touch without the skin, no smell without the nose, no taste without the tongue, no form without the eye, no sound without the ear, no thought without the mind, no wisdom without the heart, no work without the hands, no walking without feet, no scriptures without the word. So there can be nothing without the self.
Now this is saying more than I have said to date. This is proposing something absolutely amazing. This is saying that there is some substratum on which things are dependent, some underlying reality on which things are dependent. Now in Vedanta, one of the ways of making this profound concept more easily and more beautiful is to speak about gold and clay. It's a very simple point. If you have a gold ring or a gold necklace or a gold amulet, they're real things. You could hold them in your hand. There's a ring, there's an earring, there's an amulet. We'd all agree, we'd look at them and like them. Is the ring something other than gold? It's not. It's only gold, and it's only ever been gold. The gold hasn't changed. It's simply a function and form and name of the gold manufactured into a ring. But it's always gold and never not gold. Similarly, clay. If the potter works with the clay and fashions the clay and fashions it into a pot, there is the pot. We can look at the pot and hold the pot and pass the pot around and agree on the pot. But what is the pot? It's clay that we give the name pot to because of its shape and its form, but it's clay, it's still clay. It's dependent on the clay and can never be anything else but the clay. Yet, it exists as pot because the property of the ability to fashion clay into that form is possible in the universe. But it's clay. This means there is something underlying pot and plate and cup. Clay. It's always clay. The ring is always gold. Now here we are in Swansea, by the sea. I like coming to the sea. I like coming to Swansea, firstly, because I'm a Welsh boy. I was born in Wales. I like coming to the sea because I don't live by the sea. If you live by the sea, you might like coming to my place. I live on the Somerset Moor, so it's different from the sea. I like coming to the sea. I like looking at the sea. But if you live by the sea, you might know it very well, I expect. Many of you here must. Can you describe ocean? Is it possible to describe ocean? Not really. It's quite hard to say what ocean is. But you know it well because you live by it and you walk on the beach and you swim in it or surf in it, whatever happens, sail on it. And you'll be very familiar with the waves of the sea and the tides of the sea and the currents of the sea. But just like clay and gold, the wave in the ocean, is the wave separate from the sea? No. It's sea, isn't it? It's always sea. And what is sea? It's water. It's always water. So whether there's a wave, or there's spray, or there's surf, or there's a rivulet coming up the beach, or there's evaporation as the vapor comes off the ocean and goes up into the clouds, all those things we can look at and say what they are, but it's always, always water, even though its form and function can be distinctly looked at and compared. So there's an underlying strata that is water. And then that passage ended by saying the most profound thing that's perhaps possible to say, that all these experiences that are being had by you in your life, this world itself, in fact, is only possible because of the self. So this is suggesting that there is an underlying common strata, a substratum to you and me and humanity and us and sentience and consciousness and animals and things. Now, we just said, or I just said 15 minutes ago, that the self is this I am and I know. Existence, consciousness. That is the self. That's what we said. So does this mean then that existence, consciousness, is the water, is the substratum of our entire lives? And didn't I say earlier, that the definition of God was existence, consciousness, infinity? So is it possible that existence, consciousness, this power which requires much discussion to understand, this power which was powering your life in 1986 and is powering it today, is it possible this power is the same power that defines God? So does that mean that I and that we call God are one phenomena? And isn't this the ultimate truth of Vedanta? Not two, non-dual, all is one. So those three planes of reality, me, the world, and God, are we being told that that entire infinite wonder is one? Yes, we are being told that. So therefore we're being told that I am not separate from God. And the very existence, consciousness, shining in me is itself what we have called God. This is quite a big idea. After tea, we can discuss it through questions and answers. And we can also discuss the mind. But I will stop talking now and we'll hear the mantras. And then we'll have some taste of the meditation which leads to the discovery of what I have been speaking about.